This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Everyone, I'm Mari Forth.
I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from Aora, Sydney.
And this is Crime Scene, the true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. You can get this podcast along with all the other fantastic reality TV content by subscribing to robhasawebsite.com/wrapupsfeed. That's robhasawebsite.com/wrapupsfeed.
We'd love it if you would subscribe to our dedicated feed as well. Please go to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed. You'll get your true crime on Tuesdays. If you've already subscribed, thank you so much. Last week, we watched Quiet on Set with the mess magnates, Sasha and Kirsten. Mari, what did we watch this week?
This week, we watched Can I Tell You a Secret on Netflix. It was directed by Natasha Gaunt and Liza Williams. Liza Williams actually directed Hell Camp, Teen Nightmare, which we covered on episode 88 with Chappelle. We said there was a lot of fluff. It just covered the story they were looking at and not a lot of breath into the wider societal aspects. And we thought it was cool while we were watching it, but it left us a little unsatisfied. Our guest and I gave it 3 magnifying glasses and Sarah gave it 2.5 after initially rating it 2. But it's also no secret how much we love having today's guest on the scene, equaling Chappelle's appearances now, another 7-timer, Matt Scott. Matt, how are
Matty?
You?
Woo! 7 times. I am so happy to be here. And honestly, like, I feel like when Chappelle's here, I'm here too. So I feel like I've been here 14 times. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We're just that connected. But no, okay. Always happy to be here with the two of you. And to talk about some crime or
my wrestling tag team partner is over here adding title reigns like he's Charlotte Flair or something.
I'm just gonna call you a several timer.
Okay, yeah. I'm a several timer. Exactly several times. Happy to be here though.
And we're so glad to have you back, especially for a very interesting property. So let's get to the crime. Matthew Hardy, now 33. It's just so funny. It's kismet that you're on here again.
Yes. Pro wrestler Matt Hardy.
Yes.
I wonder if they know about each other or not. Like, that's my big question.
I really cracked up at that name reveal. But Matthew Hardy, now 33, is an English cyber stalker. He is believed to have attacked 63 victims over 11 years, making him one of the most prolific cyber stalkers in the UK. Several women that he victimized went to law enforcement seeking help. And of course, their fears were dismissed.
Of course. Shocker.
Of course. Right. But finally, PC Kevin Anderson of the Cheshire Police made the case his mission. Enough evidence was amassed so that Hardy would be arrested. And after initially denying culpability, Hardy pled guilty. In the UK, only 0.1% of stalkers are charged, and the average custodial sentence is about 13.5 months. Hardy was sentenced to 9 years, but was later reduced to 8 years on appeal. This was interesting. I don't think it was anything like I imagined when I picked it, or what we decided on it. I can't remember how.
No, you picked it. Don't back out of it. It was you.
We were like, can I tell you a secret or American conspiracy?
Right.
It was like a toss up. Mm-hmm. I want to get your thoughts, Matt, on this. I know we normally have you on. There's no bondage on this one. So we did.
How dare you? Okay, wait. The last thing you need to do is bring up that you, I wouldn't even call it typecasting because it has nothing to do with me, but you just have a thing for putting me on bondage related episodes.
But we didn't this time. See, look at us. Gross.
I mean, not a physical bondage, but more of an emotional bondage.
Those girls were saying they didn't go out anymore. They're bound to their home. So there is bondage there.
Yeah, there you go.
I should have said women. They're not girls. They're women.
What were your thoughts on this two-part docuseries that featured victims of a prolific cyberstalker?
Yes. So I thought that this would be an interesting one to cover because it's dealing with social media. It's something that's very modern. It is also just like stalking is something that's incredibly important to shine a light on and talk about. But also, as the series points to, often there are very few folks convicted of stalking. This series, which I do regret that it was two parts and not just one, but this series for me, I love how much it centered the voices of the victims or survivors, depending on whichever term they choose to use. But it was so all over the place. I don't want to get into it too much, but that's I have a lot more negatives on my list than I do. I mean, there's the lack of a sense of time, a lack of a clear sense of place or distance, especially for people who don't live in the UK. There are, like in part two, we just get introduced to a whole bunch of other people. It's like, oh, who is she? Like, what's going on? Like, I really feel like they wanted to go in hitting a point home about social media, and they did. And they painted that picture, but it didn't have the same, like, beautiful chronology and very clear story and timeline, which so many of the other docuseries and documentaries that you all and we all have covered have. So I wasn't a huge fan, but there's a lot to talk about here, and I'm glad that we covered it.
I agree. Sarah, how about you? Your thoughts, initial thoughts?
Well, when you suggested it, I was very happy to do it because I think it's a really, really fascinating subject. And, there can't really be enough about it because there are so many aspects. You know, there's physical stalking, there's cyber stalking, combos of those. Mm-hmm. I liked the trailer, although I thought, don't do that. Don't do that. Make it a normal man's voice. It's much scarier if a normal sounding voice says, oh, you better watch out because I'm going to come and get you. It's like, it's much scarier than a manufactured voice.
That was
voice.
Scary.
And then when it was the woman's voice, it was, babes, I'm going to do this. And it's like, just say it normally. So I had a kind of aesthetic production ante on it before I started watching, but I thought that's okay. Like, this was a decision by the director. Let's see how it all folds together. Mm-hmm. I felt it's very interesting listening back to our final ratings wrap up and critique of Hell Camp, how many analogies there are with this for me. One of them is it's only telling the story that it's telling. It didn't really broaden out into the broader aspects. I minded that less with this property than I did with Hell Camp, but I thought, oh, there's a whole sort of rich vein that's not being tapped. They had a statement from one of the other county police departments saying, it was quite fantastic, the text on screen. We strive for the highest possible blah, blah, blah. If victim feels we have fallen short, we are we open our arms for discussion as to how we could have done better. It's like, well, great. Oof. Let's get that discussion. Let's have that discussion on film. Let's have that person and the flack from the police department talk about it. Let's ask them, what do you intend to do? Let's say to them, have you met Laura Richards? She has some really good ideas about how to protect women from male violence. So that is beyond the scope of this director. And like we said with Hellcamp, it's like, well, that's not the story she and her collaborator chose to tell. But I think it makes it a poorer story. The strongest part was listening to the women in part one.
Right.
Telling their story. Yeah. I mean, it was a bit confusing as to what happened, when and why, but I thought I'll let it go from them, because like anyone with trauma, it's very hard to then just go back and describe like a year, 2 years worth of attacks. Mm-hmm. I mean, the paralegal Leah had her big binder, which is almost entirely responsible for getting him charged, but she is a paralegal, so she was doing it as she was used to. Abby the fire eater and Zoe the model had memories and some screenshots, but clearly the trauma has, because sometimes they said things that didn't make sense. It's not that they were lying, it's that they hadn't made sense of it. So even more, we needed the filmmakers to assist us through that slightly confused story from the victim survivor, as you would expect from trauma, for things not to quite set. We didn't know where things were. They had a big map of the UK with lights just flashing here, there, streaming here, there, pinging here, there.
They loved that flashing graphic. Weird.
And then in part two, suddenly we have Sabrina. And that's all it says on her chiron. Well, I don't know who she is. Till later, she becomes vital. Matthew was her friend's nephew, and she ends up recording him. Her placement was very strange. I think she needed to come in later. I think Nini, who was Matthew's schoolmate and an early victim, was interesting. She wasn't placed either. I don't mind it starting in the recent past and then going back 10 years. I thought that was great. This man has been doing this consistently for all this time and not been stopped, even though he had an injunction on him to stop or he would go to jail 10 years prior, and that wasn't followed through on. So that's a really interesting nugget that wasn't mined. So have Nini place her in time, and our stomachs would drop and we would go, oh my God, he's been doing this for 10 years. And not only that, but he's had, you know, he's had a bond, a good behavior bond. I don't know if you have good behavior bonds in your country, but we do here and in the UK. He's had a bond that he broke almost immediately and nothing happened. So there were nuts and nuggets and really great material in it. The way it was placed, the way it was told to us, I was more frustrated because there was a good story there. I was more frustrated because these two directors are capable of telling the story better. And when we first meet Dr. Amy Pearson, the developmental psychologist, I was very happy to hear from her. We only hear from her briefly because it's like they want the da-da-da at the end when she reveals her own autism spectrum diagnosis. Because Matthew Hardy is also on the spectrum and uses that as an excuse. Really good stuff given 3 minutes in this very long two parts of nearly 2 hours. Oh, there's a lot.
There's a lot.
There's a lot. And if you want to have
a rebuttal.
Just to add to that, because... Yeah. One thing, Sarah, you touched on so much, but one thing that they just decided, you know, after the fact, as an afterthought, to throw in the last literal seconds before the credits was mention of how social media companies have a role to play and there's more that social media could do. It was on the screen, I believe, from the Cheshire Police Department. Mm-hmm. And how do you just put that at the end? Like, this whole story is really started out and centered on social media. Yeah. And I really do love, Sarah, how you pointed out just the, I mean, yes, it's a crime docuseries, but it really is framed as almost a horror movie from the beginning. And we're getting that, and it's dark and scary and spooky. And we go through this whole 2 hours, and then at the end, they just decide to acknowledge the role of social media companies without going into that at all, even though that seems central to the story they were attempting to tell with the series. And so I felt like, I don't know what happened. Did they run out of time? Like they ran to a deadline when they needed to have something published, and they just decided not to talk about the role of social media companies.
Yeah. Thought
maybe I doubt that. I mean, not to victim blame, but Zoe says, "How did he know so much about me?" And I thought, "Oh, she just opened a door brilliantly." They just dropped.
They didn't take it because they probably didn't say anything about it because these social media corporations like Facebook, we know for a fact that Facebook will not give up your information. We've seen it. There was a congressional hearing, like they quote unquote protect their users' privacy over everything. That's even if users are using Facebook for nefarious means, like, you know, rigging an election. So like, it's very prescient right about now, as we are like in the middle of the whole banning TikTok law being passed by Congress, being passed by the House, now having to go to the Senate, that this they didn't know that this was going to happen. But it's very interesting that this is coming out at a time where social media is being talked about as, is this a security risk? Is this just censorship? And I think it's really interesting that Facebook, Meta, Instagram was definitely highlighted here, because I've seen this happen. So I can't remember if I've told this story on podcast or not, but like my grandmother, like my grandmother on I barely get on Facebook, but when I get on Facebook, I know. Yeah, I try to keep up with everything, but I can't.
Join our Facebook group.
Yes.
Crime Scene Podcast.
Exactly. But my grandma, her profile has been like stolen and copied 20 million times. They keep getting this old people. Like you've seen him at like all every day. Time I go on, I'll get a friend request from her. It's the same profile picture, it's her same name and stuff like that. And I'm like, I know you're not the real one. And then if you search her name, there's like 6 or 7 pages that come up that are exact duplicates of hers. And this is how they get you, because they add you, and then if they add you, then they add more of the family. So the family sees you, and then they're like, oh, this must be the one. So then they And it spreads just like that, just like how in this docuseries, she talks about how it spread from her family to like her friend's family to her friend's father. He was like one of the girl's friend's father up to like honestly face criminal charges, and this is how it happened. So like, we really need to be careful on these social media platforms with opening ourselves up. You know, putting all of our information out there, but being very selective. And I realized it was a fake profile, because I hadn't realized it the first time. You know, I didn't realize the first fake one that popped up. Mm. I just added it, whatever. Uh-oh. Then it tried to reach out to me, and I was like, no, because
no, girl. Girl, bye.
Yes, exactly. Like I know the relationship I have with this person, and it is not one where we talk on Facebook. And so I immediately shut that down. I told my mom, I'm like, Mom, you need to do something, because like there's all of these pages popping up, and it's just detrimental. But I put all that aside to say I thought this two parts for this docuseries, I didn't mind it. I honestly didn't mind it. They're two parts, about 45-ish minutes each. The reason why I didn't mind it is because I felt like they broke them up in a way that I was like, this makes sense to me. Like, again, we said that whole first part, we were just talking to a few of the survivors mm-hmm. and their experiences. Again, I was confused about a lot of their experiences. I was confused on the "can I tell you a secret" thing. And then I realized, I was like, okay, he's pretending to be other people to then manipulate this person to be this person and then using this person's photos to do this. Like, it was confusing, but I do like that the survivors got to tell their stories. And then part two was the investigation aspect. And I really thought the PC Kevin Anderson came in strong here at part two. And, you know, we really got more info about Matthew. They reveal who he is up top of the episode. And then we like go through his pathos and stuff like that. And I just kept sitting there like, how do we have so much actual audio of him? And it really made me think, Sarah, about our discussion just a few weeks ago on As We Speak, Rap on Trial, where London is becoming like a surveillance state, and that so much of it was like directly from him was very, very interesting. But I mean, there are definitely some aspects of this docuseries that I would change, but I didn't think it was like bad. Like, I didn't think it was like I wasted my time, like I'm mad. I didn't feel like my emotions were being manipulated. I didn't feel like the story was manipulative or I was being led. I felt like they were trying to tell me a story, and they may have just missed the mark slightly.
Missed the mark on details, or I think it was SDB that talked about, you know, you go down the road and there's a really interesting side road there, but we're not going to go down it. And there's an interesting side road there, but we're not going to go down it. I wasn't, look, other than the voice like that, other than if I was giving notes, I would say don't do that voice, but it's a directorial decision, and neither of us is right or wrong. It's a matter of taste.
No, but, I agree. I didn't like that either.
I did not either.
Yeah. Other than that, it's not painful to sit through by any means.
Exactly.
You know, like with Hellcamp, I felt like very cool watching it. You know, particularly as we say, we love talking to victims. We don't like hearing from perpetrators. Mm-hmm. But in the end, there's that unsatisfied feeling. We talk about watching docuseries and documentaries and then going off and doing some side googing. That can be very exciting, because a documentary can't cover absolutely everything that you want to know, but it shouldn't leave you wanting more in a bad way. It should leave you wanting more in a very, your interest is piqued. You're given a really good grounding of the situation or the case or the societal aspect of it, and you go off and you do side things. There are the ones like Jared that just don't tell you anything, and you go to Wikipedia and you get the whole story. There are ones that put in bad information. And then there are ones like this, which are good as far as it goes, but it didn't go far enough. It's sort of, to spoil my ratings, what I would say. I think it's worth talking about PC Kevin Anderson. So he's a PC, so he's only a constable. And or as we say in this country when we talk to them, constable. I would have liked to know why. What was it that, but again, this is something that I don't criticize the filmmakers for not putting in. That's just something in my mind where I say, well, that's interesting. What is it about this case that made you want to make it the case that defines your career, which is what he talks about it as?
Yeah, which, by the way, I would say I really hated the fact that part two started out with Kevin Anderson and with him talking about how every officer has one big case of their career, because to me, that's just an indication that you're ignoring all the other cases that you should be paying attention to, as we saw throughout the series. And it's funny because he's like, I mean, we could have started out with Leah in part two as one of the heroes. We could have started out with Sabrina even. I'm just saying there are other people that I would have put in that spot other than Kevin Anderson. Because why do we have to like make a statue for Kevin Anderson and like honor him and celebrate him like it,
for doing his job.
He's doing his job. Thank you. I didn't realize that's exactly
the bare minimum.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. Like we could have really continued from where part one left off, but that's just a stylistic choice.
I mean, it was. In one way, the decision was good because it took you back 10 years. But if you're going to go back 10 years, let's start with Nini, who was his schoolmate and clearly one of his early victims, and also got a legal judgment against him, which was not followed through on by the police. Mm-hmm. We could have started with Siren Kale, who I think was woefully underused here. She's an investigative journalist. So she, when you lens in part one with the three of the very current victims, then if you start part two with Siren Kale, you can lens back and say, right, this is an overall aspect that we're going to see this case as emblematic of or as part of or something like that.
Yeah. I wasn't as unsatisfied at the end, only because I was like, oh, he got 9 years. Like when he got appealed, I was like, oh, 8 years. That's still good. Yes. Like
still good. It's still good.
Yes. I was scared. This is going to be one of them documentaries. You go through all this, you go through the horrors that these victims and survivors face, and then they walk, you know, I was like, oh God. But I thought that was pretty good. It's like, I don't know, man. It's hard to really go in depth on this property because I almost feel like it's a half a step up from a one episode ID Discovery, like investigates. You know what I'm saying? Like, and not in a bad way. It's just in a way that like we're used to breaking down documentaries and stuff that have maybe just a bit more substance. And I don't want to say that in a way that diminishes the stories of the survivors and the victims, but it just feels like, I guess what Sarah is saying is there's no commentary to society as a whole. So it's like, we can't critique it on what it's trying to say to us about society as a whole. All we're presented is the case itself. And we've already said that we felt it wasn't in a way that was as palatable as it could have been. So I don't know what else to really talk about. It could have been
more powerful, really. Right. Natasha Gaunt, the other director, having a look at her credits, they're very sort of creditable, like a episode of an ID Discovery or something like that. And there's absolutely a place for those stories. But those are just the stories. I mean, Dateline never talks about broad societal issues, and it does a fantastic job of bringing us cases, and we watch them and we might think about them. I mean, I don't want to be told what to think, but when it's set up as prestige almost, I mean, not quite, but as if you're going to say, well, we're not that, we're not a one episode, you know, television serial about, you know, bad men, bad women, then give us something broader. And I think that the director that did Hellcat, Liza, I think she wants to, and I think she has the capability of it. Maybe she needs better story editors. Maybe she needs better producers. Mm. I don't know. Mm. She certainly picks very au courant subjects. They are things that we're thinking about right now. So she's very on the button. She's very contemporary with her with her thoughts and with her selection of subjects. And she glances at what we're wanting. I mean, are we wanting too much from her, Matt, in this sort of middle ground?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I think it's okay for us to follow the breadcrumbs that she's laying down. So for me, when we're starting out the series, really focusing on the social media aspects, we're focusing on, okay, this is an influencer / model, and like this is how they're using social media and the joy and freedom that it gives them. And that was really what we had established at the beginning, just the freedom with social media and posting on it. And I really did appreciate how that was in contrast with this fear and captivity that they faced along the way as they're being victimized by Matthew Hardy. And I just wish that we would have gone more into that. I wish there would have been like, it's okay if we don't hear from the social media platforms, but it would have been nice to have that aspect at least covered, because I do think that the story that they were setting up was, or maybe the point they were trying to make, Mari, to the larger societal aspect of this is, be careful on social media. You never know what to expect. You're happy-go-lucky and enjoying this, but someone like Matthew Hardy might be out there and exploiting the information that's there, exploiting your accounts, exploiting the trust that you have from others. But we didn't really go into that, even though that to me seemed to be the centerpiece of this story, beyond just the crime and what happened. I feel like it was really about social media at the heart of it.
So that's interesting, because I don't think that's what I got from it. I think if that's what they were trying to do, they woefully missed the mark. I thought it was more like a comment on cyber stalking and stalking in general, and how like they made a point to be like, this rarely happens that these guys get caught. Police normally just brush it off. I think if anything, they talked to the victims a lot about like, how did it make you feel that you went to the police and they did nothing about it? And they really harped on that, and then how these women were feeling and stuff like that. And then at the end, they really played up it was kind of a swerve, because they played it up like, oh yeah, he pled guilty, which means it's a reduction of sentence by 25%. You only get 13.5, you know, and then we get the swerve where it's like, oh no, he actually is doing like hard time and stuff like that. So I almost thought it was more of commentary on cyberstalking and how behind the police are, behind maybe some of our laws are on being able to prosecute cyberstalkers.
Yeah, so I agree with that in terms of the execution. That's what it did really effectively. Looking at part one specifically, I think that I felt like that's what they were establishing, the focus on social media. Gotcha. Then we get Kevin Anderson introduced. We get others introduced where they're going more into it. Like, I don't even know how much they use like the word stalking in part one, which it was just notable to me, because to me it was very clearly stalking. But again, they were really focused on the victims or survivors and their experiences, Abby, Leah, Zoe. That maybe is like the piece for me that felt a little disjointed. And, you know, you could say it makes sense to have these as two parts for that reason, but part one seemed to do something very different than what part two did, for sure.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think of you know, if you were to divide it, part one is very effective in doing what it does, and it shows us young women online, joyful and having fun and being free, and there's nothing that a certain type of man hates more than seeing young women happy and free, and enjoying themselves, and the punishment that you get for that. And Mari, I think you're right to see, I mean, lots of reenactments, right? But to see them sort of cowering behind a curtain and not going out, and describing that feeling of, I don't even go out anymore. I don't trust anybody. One girl lost her boyfriend because the boyfriend got a message to say, oh, she went out to the club and got it off with a security guard, and she was wearing these clothes, and he couldn't trust her when she said it wasn't true. We have another situation where a wedding, we didn't get the end of that story. That was frustrating, where a wedding of some friends almost broke up, or actually broke up, because of messages for the groom to be. So I thought all of that was very effective. Then the mess of part two, and I think where it redeemed itself was, we were so excited that he got charged and convicted with 9 years. I think sometimes we have such a disappointment when people get off or get a light sentence or get let out early, and so this was sort of, we could all go yay, 9 years. So yeah, a mixed bag for me, licorice all sorts.
let's just go straight into our magnifying glasses, and you can put any final thoughts in your rating. So, Matt, of course, we start with you. How many magnifying glasses are you going to rate? Can I tell you a secret out of a possible five?
Well, the one... So, it's interesting because my list of negatives was so much longer than my list of positives. But the positive, the huge positive for me was the focus on the victims and their voices mm-hmm. and centering them. And I was worried that part two was getting away from that. And then it really came back by the end strong, focusing on the victim, Leah, with just the file, mm-hmm. like the files and files and 700 pages, I believe. Yes. So I wanted to give this a lower rating, but I'm going to go with two. Could I do half magnifying glass? Yeah, I do whatever I want. Okay. 2.5 magnifying glasses is what I have to give it. Just because I wish it would have gone deeper into certain aspects. I wish it would have been more clear chronologically. I think there's a way of centering. I know there's a way of centering the victims while also telling a story that's based on what Matthew Hardy was doing in his crimes. And so, like, we could have gone through from 2010 onward. I think it's also interesting to think about the evolution of social media, which we've all been around and alive to see, but mm-hmm. we didn't go there. So I'm sticking with my 2.5 magnifying glasses out of 5, which I think is pretty solid.
I agree. Sarah, how many magnifying glasses are you going to rate this docuseries out of a possible 5?
Well, I'm going to go 2.5. I have to say I like it more after mm-hmm. our discussion. Same. But when I reflect that when I gave Hellcamp initially 2 and then 2.5, I said, but I'm still recommending that you watch it with Hellcamp. Mm-hmm. I'm giving this 2.5 and I'm not recommending that you watch it.
Yeah. Because,
I mean, look, turn it on and have it out of the corner of your eye. It's fine. You're not actually going to get stuff that you don't already know. If you know, our listeners are very smart. They think about this sort of they think about social justice. They think about the legal system. Mm-hmm. They think about the voices of victims being important. I just think in Hellcamp there was more to recommend it as a watch. Again, the same problems: the muddled timelines. Who was there? What did they do? Same thing. So I'm going to say 2.5 and not recommend that you watch it. Mari, how about you?
Yeah, I think it's a clean sweep across the board. I too will give it a 2.5. I came in thinking it was very middle of the road. Again, I did not dislike it. I will say it is prime cleaning your house. You know that cleaning your house with true crime on viewing. But I say that to say I did have to rewind a few times because I was like, wait, what happened? I was getting a little lost in the survivors' narratives,
right?
About what was going on with them. So I did have to rewind like a few times. So maybe it is one of those ones you got to pay attention to, but. You know, I didn't, like I said, maybe the bar is in hell, but I did not find it like flat out just not enjoyable, like Jared from Subway or I Just Killed My Dad. So
you gave Killed My Dad 3 stars, Mari. I think you're misremembering your
No, I remember the ratings and I remember the response. I remember being like, I didn't like how I Just Killed My Dad felt like it was manipulative.
Emotion. Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So in that I couldn't watch it a second time. So mm-hmm. like, but I still thought the property overall wasn't too bad. And I think that lends more well to Sky Boardman's production of the property. This one, you know, I think the story is good. I think the production actually fails the story here.
Right.
Well said. Well said. Yeah. Well mm-hmm. said. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think if you're going to clean, then watch episode 1, Eating Your Lunch, and yes. then have episode two on as you clean.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would, I don't know if I could watch episode one eating, but that's me. But no, I will say, like, it is like they really did try to do, I don't know if they tried to do a lot with this. They did do a lot of things that I really appreciated in watching it. I actually ended up like sort of watching it the first time, not paying too close attention. And then I actually watched it twice, believe it or not.
Dang.
I watched it the second time on like faster speed. Thank you, Netflix app on my phone. But I will say that one of the things for me that was just a little off with all of this was that you could like, you don't have to dive so deep into all of the questions that could come up or all of the shiny roads. Yellow brick roads, detours.
Yeah,
you don't have to go down them. You don't need to go down them. You just need someone verbally to acknowledge those facts or just make a comment like, yeah, well, you know, social media platforms. I'm stuck on that because it's so huge and timely as well. But just acknowledge and move on. But a lot wasn't acknowledged. And yet I do still think this was powerful. I will also say something that wasn't acknowledged for me. It was a lot of blonde women, almost all blonde women.
I had trouble at the beginning separating Zoe and Abby. Yeah.
Abby and Leah.
Leah. And then Leah's mom came on for a little bit. And I was like, what did she
Leah had to
add to that conversation other than how Leah was feeling?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And
confirming.
Like, right. It was about like, the protecting her. We got it. And. Yeah, protecting her and then talking to the doorman and all of that stuff. So the piece of that that's interesting to me is that they took time to film those interviews, which I can only imagine how much production time that takes to film, like talking with Maria and then Leah's mom, that is, and not really using that for much. It's fascinating to think how they put this all together and produce it. Maybe Maria was like in the room and they said, okay, let's film something with you, you know?
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to our recommendations. Matt, do you have anything to recommend to our listeners?
I do. And I just have to say, Mari, I appreciate what you were saying about your grandma being used,
all of the above.
I've been bamboozled
on social media. Bamboozled. Yeah. Well, she was bamboozled, but people are being bamboozled by catfish her. And so I will say, I was I've given this recommendation before, but I want to recommend that people listen to one of my favorite podcasts, Scam Goddess, hosted by Lacey Mosley. Not only because it's funny, but it really does make you aware of scams. I was just talking with my mom a couple weeks ago, and she was like, have you ever been scammed? And I actually probably shouldn't talk about this on the podcast because someone's going to try to really deeply scam me. But I was saying, you know, like when you are aware of the scams that are out there and you just stay on top of it and you stay skeptical, like, believe me, if I have a family member texting me from a number I don't know or in a weird way, I'm not responding. I will leave my family hanging. And I told my mom and I told her if it's me, if someone's pretending to be me, which by the way, there was a text that was scammy, weird, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Don't respond. Leave me in jail or wherever I'm trapped. Please don't pay the ransom. So Scam Goddess is a great podcast to just get you thinking about those things. And I think the best lesson, which I believe also applies here, is just to slow down and to not react so quickly. Like think. Mm-hmm. Take time to think. Don't freak out. And like maybe call up your friend or family member first and foremost before responding.
Exactly. Scams require you to make a decision right then and there. I almost got scammed.
Was it me? Was it someone?
No. Was it me?
Were they pretending to be me?
No, it was an Amazon scam.
I hate those.
Yeah. So I got like a message saying like, oh, you're on your Amazon account. Somebody ordered laptops.
Yeah.
You know, call us and call us and see. So I called the dude.
No.
I know. And he was like, yeah. He's like, okay, let me get access to your account. Like, okay, yeah, I see the purchases of the iPhones, of the iPads, but I can return it. So just go into your bank account and give me your bank account and we'll give it back. I was like, no, this doesn't sound right. And I was like, right. I was like, if it's, I said, and I had looked because nothing had posted. And I was like, no, I have a credit union. So if it gets posted, I can just literally call my bank and tell them that, you know, this is not a purchase I made. And he's like, no, I can do it. Just give me your information. Let's go into it. Like he was like trying to walk me through on the computer. I was like, no, I was like, let me go ask my husband.
Using the patriarchy.
And then as soon as I said that, he like hung up. I was like,
oh no,
you got to be careful when, yeah. Cause when you're Googling, like when you're Googling major companies, sometimes that first thing that pops up is not that company, like a good like 9 times out of 10, because that's what I did. I Googled like Amazon customer service, and that was not Amazon customer service. I remember somebody I know got kind of scammed by like the post office. They just wanted to change their address, and they Googled like change your address for the post office. Ended up paying like $90 their address. The address got changed because they did the paperwork. But if you do the paperwork yourself, it's $15. It's like $10. Yes.
Yeah. What a scam. What a scam. And I also just add in here, speaking of scammy text messages, I know we're going down a rabbit hole here.
Might as well. We got
I have going. I have multiple times gotten texts that are pretending to be my boss or my executive director at work.
Really?
Saying, Matt, I need you to do something. Let me tell you, whether or not that's a scam, please use the official channels, use the official emails. Mm-hmm. And I've also gotten those before, but like, look, take your time, slow down. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Nothing's that urgent. Think, check the sources of it. Double check with the people that you're used to checking with in the ways that you need to.
Yeah.
Just like, don't let this be you.
Because don't technically in this links. Documentary,
no links,
yeah,
no links.
Yeah, links. Do not click any links. Technically in this documentary, that's how it gets kicked off with like Zoe, the fire dancer, right?
Yes.
Zoe? Yes. She gets a message from one of her coworkers like, oh, I'm so sorry. I thought I was talking to you. And I realized I wasn't. You know what I'm saying? Like he checked in with her because he was getting scammed, basically.
No, you weren't, girl. You Slack. No one's hacking into my Slack to pretend that.
exactly.
Like, no, you can't do
exactly.
That.
Exactly. No. Yeah. So, yeah. So stay out. Vigilant. Stay vigilant out there.
Stay vigilant. Because if it's real, it's fine. I got a text and an email in the middle of the night here in Australia from the portal that pays me American dollars, which I'm very happy for, saying you have recently changed your personal/financial details. If this wasn't you, if this was you, whatever. And I thought, no, that's definitely not right. But I screenshot it and then I went to the internet and I got the correct address, sent it to them, and I went through all of that. And meanwhile, it was actually them and there'd been a glitch, which they then sent a follow-up email to everybody that it had happened to, plus they answered my inquiry. So you will find out. There's nothing urgent. You will find out if it's real or not in the time to come. Yeah.
But I will also say, beyond just watching out for links and all, I really love a lesson that I took away from this docuseries from Zoe. You might have missed it, but get a samurai sword. Like, I'm telling you.
I have like
very important.
I'm not shocked that you have.
I thought of you, Mary, because I know that you are a sword family.
Yes, we are. We are a blade family.
Good to know.
Letting everybody know out there.
Oh my god. I might need to borrow.
Don't go around to Mary's place, everybody.
No.
You're in for a short, sharp shock.
Sarah, what do you have to recommend to our listeners?
Well, Don't laugh, but I'm going to recommend Elspeth on Paramount Plus. Yes.
Okay. So is this an ad?
Yes.
You're right. I hope we get paid for this.
And let me continue. I have a point. So those of us in the survivor community are disposed to be very anti-Elspeth because there were relentless promos of the show during the 2-hour premiere of Survivor 46. And I thought, I'm definitely not watching that, but it's such a charming character played by Carrie Preston, who's such a watchable, likable, interesting actor. This character comes from The Good Wife and The Good Fight.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah. I thought she might have been a little bit like a little spice that you only need in bits. I did worry that a whole show centered on her would be too much. But I am going to soft recommend Elspeth. It's very entertaining and the murders aren't real, which is a very nice relief to us folks. So if you've been put off watching Elspeth because of the relentless promos, give it a try. It's a nothing. It's a little marshmallow and you eat it and you're happy and you move on and you completely forget it in 10 minutes. So my recommendation is Elspeth. Mari, what about you?
I'm going to recommend our other property that we considered, American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders, also on Netflix. I watched it because I was like, just in case, I want to like make a switch.
Right.
That one is a 4-part docuseries and there's no way. Like, it's very interesting, but it's thick. Like, it is thick. Like, this C's. One, yeah. Exactly. No, how Beyonce spells it. That's how thick it is. And so, like, I almost thought, because it centers on a reporter who people think may have been murdered. The police rule it a suicide, but it's under very strange circumstances. And he just so happened to be investigating what he coined as the Octopus Murders, which is this giant conspiracy that starts with everybody's favorite president, Ronald Reagan. The president who
say Barack Obama
single-handedly ruined the U.S. And how he had his tentacles and all of these maybe murders and conspiracies that this tentacles. It is a lot. I was riveted, but I was scared. I was like, oh my God, if this really is everything that they say there it is, our government is the boogeyman. You know what I'm saying? Like, it really is. I really wanted to have Matt watch it because again, the journalism aspect is really interesting to me. But there were so many, like, this is a red thread. Like, you're going to need 4 spools of red thread type of thing.
Oh my God.
They do a great job of timelines. They do a pretty good job of trying to tell you all of the main players. But honestly, there are just so many that it can get overwhelming. But I thought it was a fascinating watch. As somebody who loves like American Scandal, government scandal type of properties, I've talked about different podcasts that I've liked that deal with government. My father and my mother are both in the military with top secret clearances and stuff like that. Oh. So I've heard plenty of stories like this. So it always piques my interest. But I mean, this one was thick. It's so interesting. So if anybody listens, I will definitely recommend it. If you guys go and watch it, tell me what you think, because it's so much. But they had me at hello in the first episode, where the reporter is found dead in a bathtub with his wrist slits at a hotel. And they're like, oh, it's suicide. Why was his wrist cut where it was like 8 cuts on one hand, 6 cuts on the other? They're so deep that the tendons are sliced. And we should all know that once your tendons are sliced, you can't hold anything. So
Yeah.
Very suspicious, to say the least. So that had me hooked, and they talked to a lot of people, and it was very interesting. So definitely go check it out. Let me know what you think. There's no way we could cover it here. It is just too much.
And yet we almost did.
Listeners, remember that we have a speak pipe. And if you want to send us your reviews of anything or argue with us or agree with us, you can record a speak pipe and we'd happily put it onto the show. And that's speakpipe.com/crimescene.
Here at Crime Scene, we are eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP. That's at Crime SEENRHAP, or email us at crimescenerhap@gmail.com.
We're on TikTok at crime.scene and other social media at Crime Scene Podcast. And please remember to subscribe to our feed, robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed. It makes a huge difference.
Matt, what do you have going on? Where can the people find you?
Oh, thanks for asking, Mari. I never thought you would. You could find me at MattScottGW on all social media platforms except for TikTok, because I can't figure out how to apparently the account exists. It's a whole thing. And then TikTok's going to shut down, so it's not even worth it anymore. But I'm on all of the other platforms, especially Twitter and Instagram there. And I'll also plug, I'm going to skip over plugging the Wrestling Rehab up. I'm going to leave that to you, Mari, as always. What a pro Mari is, right? Well, you could also find me on the show Pod Friends here on the RHAP Network.
Woo! One of the best podcasts in existence.
Yes.
Keep going, Sarah. Rob has a website.com/podfriendsfeed. Again, available on all of the different platforms. You could also find the video versions on the RHAP YouTube channel. And one thing that's really fun, it's the Survivor season, that little show that we all love on CBS. And
it's Paramount Plus. All met.
Yes, how we all met, the thing that brought us together. Well, if you follow at Hey Pod Friends, that's H-E-Y Pod Friends, not H-A-Y Pod Friends, that'd be a different account. You could just see me posting some of the past episodes with former Survivor players. So that's the main thing I have going on. I'm excited for the Survivor season. I'm excited for other podcasts and things coming up. I'm excited for WrestleMania. Yeah.
The biggest WrestleMania ever.
Lies. But anyway, here we are. So yeah, that's where you can find me, Matt Scott GW. And thanks as always for having me. But like, Sarah, I feel like I should ask you, where can the people find you?
Well, the people can find me at Sarah Carradine on all the things, if that's something they'd like to do. Over on Silent Podcasts, I've wrapped up my coverage of Australian Survivor, Titans versus Rebels. Wow, that winner. Incredible. Ooh. I was joined by David Bloomberg to chew over the finale and give you a season overview. And your Aussie queens, Annabelle Fiddler and I, are covering season 2 of Alone Australia, which starts tomorrow night if you are listening to this on the day it drops. Our guest for the season premiere is original Titan Eden Porter. So very excited to talk with him about this amazing show. I was talked into the show by our listeners. We put out a poll to say, what would you like the Aussie Queens to cover? And overwhelmingly, they said Alone Australia. And I thought, oh, I suppose so. Ripped through season 1, and I just absolutely love it. So I'm very excited. And on the weekend, I joined the Cool Kids as I played Blood on the Clock Tower with Dwight Moore's. Yeah, on Dwight Moore's stream.
Yeah, we were all there. Yeah.
So I either did really well or I didn't do very well at all. Have a watch and find out. What about you, Mari?
Of course, if you like more of me and Matt Scott, you can find us over on the Wrestling Rehab Up podcast, where we bring you the highlights of the weekend wrestling. We're a little over 1 week away from WrestleMania, where me and Matt will be in the attendance. If you want to see video vlogs, us like going out and about, us being at the stadium. You can go and follow us on our new YouTube page, youtube.com/@WrestlingRehapUp. That's youtube.com/@WrestlingRehapUp. We have been having some just phenomenal guests lately, and it has just been, it's just been so fun. And we're on the road to WrestleMania. We can't wait to be bringing it live from WrestleMania. So definitely please go check us out. You can also follow me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's two, like the number two. Over on the Recap Kickback, we have just finished doing our March Madness bracket for Black TV sitcom themes. Talk about a great time. Me and Chappelle and our special guests had such an amazing time talking about a very hard bracket over there. So if you want to know more, go to recapkickback.com. You can subscribe there. You can get in on all the fun. You can subscribe to the Recap Kickback YouTube. You can go to the Recap Kickback group, Facebook group page. Like, We are really having fun. It is a kickback. Come and join the conversation, as always. That's it for me. Sarah, what are we watching next week?
Next time on Crime Scene, we're covering Me Hereafter with Katie from A Date with Dateline. Watch it on Hulu in the US and Disney in Australia, and send us your comments and questions.
Thanks to Matt Scott for joining us, Will from America for the theme music, and the whole RHAP team behind the scenes. Until next time,
case closed.